and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community to listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, an update on the Knik Arm Bridge Project. Recorded at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Make It Monday Forum on April 23rd, Chair of the Knik Arm Bridge Toll Authority Board of Directors, Michael Foster, is coming up next on Addressing Alaskans after the news.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's that time for us to start our Make It Monday forum. I'd like to thank everyone for making time today to come out and join us. My name is Bruce Bustamante. I'm chairman of the board for the Anchorage Chamber this year, and also work for Holland America, Princess Alaska, and Princess Cruises based here in Anchorage. Okay, now for our main presentation. Michael Foster has more than 20 years of engineering, design, and construction-related experience in Alaska as the owner and principal engineer of Michael L. Foster & Associates. He provides consulting services for cold regions, sanitary, environmental, and geotechnical engineering for investigation, design, and construction projects. Additionally, he has a thorough knowledge of Alaska regulations and was appointed to the Kabata Board of Directors by the governor in January of 2009. Michael also enjoys being an active community member, focusing much of his philanthropy and volunteerism to the Boy Scouts of America, an organization in which he is passionately involved. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Michael Foster.
Thank you. Well, it's a little more of a friendly audience than my last presentation I did, which was to the Senate Finance Committee. And I will tell you that we are not promoting Willow as the future capital of Alaska, but if it just so happened to be, it wouldn't be a bad place. I did think that our Dittman poll numbers probably went up after that comment in Anchorage, but the three most frequently asked questions, actually, let me back up a little bit. I want to introduce a couple of people in the audience. George Wersch, who used to be the former chair of Kabata 5 years ago, thereabouts. Andrew Nemec, who's our executive director, and Shannon McCarthy, who is our public information officer. So after the presentation, if you have any really detailed questions, you can ask Shannon or Andrew. But the three most frequently asked questions, particularly since we got out of session this, first part of session, now they're on the next part of session, but when do we expect to start construction? Well, our anticipation is 2014, so only about 2 years from now. The second question we have is, how much time will it save me in commuting? And my response is, it is not being built for today's traffic, it's being built for tomorrow's traffic. And so if you live in Palmer or Wasilla, more than likely you're still going to take the Glen. And as I was asked last year by one of the assembly members, and Chris will recognize or will remember this probably, is if I live in Eklutna, why would I take the bridge? And I said, well, I hope you wouldn't take the bridge if you live in Eklutna. Okay, so the bridge is being built for tomorrow's population, and we'll talk about that. And then the very last question is, who's paying for it? There's a lot of discussion over the obligations of the state. It's being paid through toll revenue, but the bridge actually belongs to the state from the day, actually it belongs to the state during construction, but from the day it opens, it's a state asset. And so when somebody says, why should we be obligated to pay for it? My response is that there's being built through a private equity or private partner. Why shouldn't we be obligated to pay for it? Because it belongs to us, okay? But let me go ahead and get into a little bit of where we're at. Okay, 80 years of planning. I grew up in Alaska. I actually grew up in Glen Allen, although I did do a little stint here in Anchorage in elementary school. But I've seen the state change a lot in the past 50 plus years. But I think the Knik Arm or Knik Crossing has been talked about as long as I can remember. And obviously has been talked about before I was born. We did a Dittman survey, and we do this every year right before session, kind of give an idea of where the residents of Alaska stand on the project. You can see about two-thirds support the project, about two-thirds think that the existing Glen Highway Parks infrastructure will not be adequate to handle future traffic. There was a survey that was done by the legislature. I got asked several questions at Senate Finance about the results of that poll, but it's kind of a, you have to read all the questions and to get to the real answer, but if you look at the poll, it says about two-thirds of Alaskans say build the project. Interesting enough, we did get through the House this year with a bill that we had sponsored through Representative Newman. It was a two-thirds vote, so two-thirds of the representation of the population at the House level supported the legislation that we had in Juneau. Of course, we didn't get out of Senate Finance because we never got invited for the second committee meeting. this is kind of, everybody here kind of knows what it looks like, but I did a Seattle Chamber presentation here recently, so I'll kind of throw this in here to give everybody an idea of where the crossing would be and then kind of the population distribution. And South Central makes up over half of all of Alaska, always has since I was in elementary school. It's always been, you know, 50-60% of the whole state. There's about 90,000 residents in the Mat-Su area and about 290,000 in the Anchorage area based on the 2010 census. These are, we get a lot of criticism or a lot of discussion over which model we're using and who we're using, and you've probably seen that ICER and I have been going around a little bit over a statement that I've said our numbers are within 1% of each other, and okay, theirs is 119% for growth and mine's 118%, so technically they're a little less than 1%, but Senate Finance, I got beat up pretty bad by that statement. But these are the different models. You have the census, and then these are the numbers that come out for the 2010. 2035, now these are the real telling numbers. And as I said earlier, the bridge is not being built for today's traffic, although today's traffic will use it. It's being built for the future. If you look at and you believe in Alaska, whether we have a bullet line or whether we have resource development, large mega projects, Alaska has always been growing. It's a good place to live, a good place to raise families. And so I believe in the future of the state, and I believe in the future of South Central. And if you look, you know, you can argue whether the Mat-Su borough is going to go to 160,000, 190,000, and to me that's kind of noise. It shows there's significant growth in the Mat-Su area, there's significant growth in the South Central area. Sometimes you have to look back in the past to say, well, is that out of the norm, or is it kind of, you know, is this the way we've been growing? I can remember when I was a kid in Anchorage in elementary school, there wasn't anything on Hillside. Glen Highway was two lanes. Parks Highway wasn't being built. TAPS wasn't even really in the forefront. Tourism wasn't here. There wasn't a lot in the state in the 50s and 60s. But if you just look at 25 years in the past to kind of get an idea of 25 years in the future, you can remember in the 80s we had single dollar oil and single digit oil. We still showed growth between 85 and 2010. We still predict, the state still predicts, that there will be significant growth or a fairly normal growth compared to the last 25 years in South Central. Yeah, these numbers are just a comparison of all the different models that are there. And I said earlier, sometimes it's in the noise. You know, whether you have 160,000 in the borough or 190,000 in the borough, whether Eagle River grows, you know, by 74% or 71%, what these numbers show is that South Central is growing. And no matter how you look at it, you know, unless we put the for sale sign up or the close for business sign, South Central is the economic engine, and it will continue to grow. And interesting in some of the numbers, and I'll kind of jump ahead a little bit, but the Anchorage Bowl area is running out of space. And in fact, most of Anchorage's growth is between Eagle River and Aklutna. And in fact, in the next 23 years, 25-year model, 74%. That area grows by 74%, which is a significant part of all of Anchorage's growth. The Mat-Su Burrow grows by at least 100%. The projections by ICER is actually 119%. Okay, so if we agree on population, if we agree it's a good place to be, we agree that the Mat-Su is going to grow because available land, affordable housing, the Anchorage is running out of space for industrial, business, residential land, is getting tight within the municipality of Anchorage. If you look at all this and you say, well, what happens without a bridge? Well, today, you know, most folks don't realize there's 30,000 vehicles going underneath the Eklutna Bridge on an average daily count. 30,000 vehicles on the Glen Highway at the Eklutna Bridge, which is kind of the real first measure of the valley coming into Anchorage. Of course, that includes commercial going north and stuff, but 30,000, that's a measured number. That's not a number we made up or projected, so no one can criticize us for that number. It comes off a little counter. The next number is 52,000 at the sixth lane, which is at Highland. Okay, 30,000, 52,000 in today's numbers. Actually, it was 2009 or 10. Those two numbers are actually, that puts the Glen at basically design capacity. It doesn't mean you can't add more cars to it. All it means is traffic slows down, you have more stoppages. To give you an idea, the Seward Highway coming in at 36 is about 51,000 vehicles. Okay, that's the volume of putting 50,000 vehicles on the four lane of the Glen. You see how the Seward Highway kind of bottlenecks coming into town. So under an NHS, National Highway System project, transportation corridor, the Glen is at capacity basically today. Now, I've heard a lot of people say, well, you can still add a lot of traffic to it. Well, capacity is usually determined on maximum traffic. It isn't on 2 a.m. in the morning in the middle of winter. It's really based on your high volumes. Okay, so what happens in 25 years? Okay, this is without a bridge. Okay, so these are the models that DOT has worked on, and we've worked on them. The Glen Highway at the Eklutna Bridge goes to about 65,000 vehicles. Okay, that's assuming you're seeing, you know, the 100% growth in the Mat-Su area. And like I said, whether it's 160,000 or 190,000, is still significant growth. So the Glen goes at the four lane, it goes to 65,000 vehicles. That's more cars than come into 36 on the Seward on the four lane there. So it gives you an idea of what that would look like. Well, even more amazing when you get to the Highland, which is the sixth lane, the model shows that 110,000 vehicles will be on the road there. Not only do you have the growth coming in from the valley coming in, you also have the 74% growth that Eagle River, Peters Creek, Chugach is going to see. So 110,000 vehicles, and today it's at 52,000 vehicles. Okay, so without a bridge, that's what's coming. Okay, so when you get the population and you get the traffic, to me those aren't, you know, I hear people say, oh, that group Kubota comes up with these numbers and stuff. These are basically data points. Okay, I haven't got to our numbers, but these are data points here. This is what it's going to look like. Okay, just to give you an idea where they're at, I'm sure you all know where the Eklutna Bridge is, and you all know where Highland is. So those are where the two counters are. Okay, so what happens without a bridge? And this is where it gets down to the real hard numbers, you know. The Glen will go from basically a six lane from Eagle River, which would be the Highland area, all the way out to Wasilla, and that's to handle the 65,000 vehicles, which is more than you're seeing on the six lane of the Glen today. So it gives you an idea of relationship. The Glen will go from an eight lane from North Eagle River all the way into Anchorage to handle 110,000 vehicles. Okay, those are minimums, because the day you put 52 on a six lane, this model shows 110 on an eight lane. So, you know, I've heard of things about, you know, the single occupant, high occupancy lanes and stuff. Well, they work great. Well, they work great when there's no snow on the ground. It's kind of hard to plow those when there's snow on the ground, but. You know, at a minimum, you're looking at some major transportation improvements. DOT did a cost estimate in 2008 dollars just to handle the Glen improvements is $3 billion, just the Glen, and that was in 2008. So you can imagine what the Glen and Parks numbers would look like 10, 15 years out. And again, you know, some of this stuff isn't in your transportation model, your AMATS, because this is under national highway system. It's a different pot of money. You'll hear, and Chris will smile, that Kubota's taken out of this pool of Anchorage's roads and trails and infrastructure, and the Kinnick Arm Crossing is part of the NHS system, and therefore cannot take money out of AMATS. It comes out of a different pool of federal money. It comes out of the same pool that the Parks and Glen Highway has, although on this project it's public-private partnership, so it's actually private money. So $3 billion minimum if you don't do anything. And you can imagine the federal highway fund is drying up. I'm sure you've heard this. And in fact, Alaska looks to see less than half of what they usually see in the coming years of federal highway money. And then the state still has to do a match of that, which is usually roughly about 10%. So if it isn't $3 billion or $4 billion, the state's still going to have to kick in $300 or $400 million, plus it's going to take away from other statewide projects. So without a bridge, the population, the traffic, and the costs are pretty significant. And I got to this point in a couple of presentations, and it's like almost a no-brainer. Okay, what do we do to take care of this? Well, this is just a summary of the numbers I went over, and I believe this presentation will be on your website, or it will be available. This used to be on the RDC website. I'm not sure if it's still there, but it's on our website too. So these are just some comparison numbers. Okay, now we talk about a bridge. Where's the bridge? How's it connect? You know, I've heard the discussion, well, if you connect to Point McKenzie, then the state's going to have to build all this infrastructure and everything else. Well, guess what? Those models, those studies are already ongoing. As you know, there's a rail system going into Point McKenzie. The road infrastructure is coming into Point McKenzie. So a lot of the argument that if you build this, the state will have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars building infrastructure for this, well, it's already being planned. The other argument is if you don't build this, the state's going to have to spend many more hundreds of millions of dollars building more infrastructure in the Wasilla area, what we call the urban sprawl, because that population is going somewhere. With the models that we have, a lot of this population will end up in Point McKenzie, Kinnick Goose Bay area, and therefore the amount of additional infrastructure will be less than what I call the urban sprawl if you had to update, improve Fishhook, Palmer Wasilla, the bypass and stuff. Project alignment, our responsibility, our legislative mandate, and Kubota was created by a 2003 legislature session, legislature. Sometimes I have to point that out because when we go to journal, I keep getting beat up, and it's like, well, you guys created Kubota, so what do you expect us to do? And Kubota was created with a mission, as George will smile, was to connect east and west. Well, you can only do that with a bridge. I guess you could have a tunnel, but it's a bridge. And there's also 18 miles of infrastructure that's under our authority also. So this shows the connection from the northern part to the very southern part of what's under Kubota's authority. Okay, phase one. Right now it's the Point McKenzie AC connector. That's how it will connect into Port of Anchorage and then go north. It's a four-lane bridge. It's a four-lane foundation bridge with pedestrian and bike. The foundation is built out 100%. The deck itself is only built out to a two-lane because it is toll, which means as the traffic picks up and there's more revenue earned, then the deck will be expanded. And I've heard people say, well, geez, if you have one accident, it's going to close it down. It is a two-lane national highway road, which means it's 44 feet wide. It has two shoulders, two 10-foot shoulders, and two 12-foot lanes. There's plenty of capacity to move cars around it. There's a cut and cover tunnel through Government Hill, you know, and I certainly sympathize with any community that has any land loss or residential or commercial land loss, but this is about a $50 million mitigation to minimize the impacts to Anchorage's oldest community. And it is a cut and cover, and there is a photo that we have before and after to give you an idea of what it looks like. We expect it to take 3 or 4 years to build. It is a private partnership. So, of course, in the private sector, time is money. We expect them to build it faster than we can in the public sector. So we expect it to be a 3 or 4 year construction window. The initial cost for the two-lane deck is about $715 million, and we go to the four-lane deck, it's about another $115 million. So about an $830 million project. Full build-out contractual obligation. The public-private partner, the partner in this, will have full responsibility for everything under phase one. This is Government Hill as it sits today. If you look up in the top, that's where the old tank farm used to be. That is military land that's been conveyed to the Port of Anchorage. Government Hill is kind of there in the middle and to the left. And then AC coupler and the railroad facility is down at the bottom. So this is before, and this is what it would look like after. Okay, so we consider that to be pretty minimal. There are two residential properties that we have to acquire. One strip hotel and then two commercial, and the two commercial actually sits on state land. It's leased land right now. We've already closed on one of the residential properties. We're in negotiation on the other properties. We're close to having that completed. We expect the right of way to be completed this year. I've heard criticism that we're way out ahead of the gun. You don't do right of way before you do the contracting and everything, and I'll point out how many years before they actually put the Tudor Lake Otis intersection in, did the state and muni come in and buy the properties on the corner there? They did it years in advance. And in fact, the process we're in is approved by Federal Highways Administration as the standard process for right-of-way acquisition. So it isn't that group out there trying to come through and take all this property. It's part of the formal process. We're doing it in accordance with the federal regulations, and we're close to being done. Phase two is the Ingram Gamble viaduct, and that's the connection. That's the four lane that would come into Ingram Gamble, and I hate to use this word, but that would be kind of the highway to highway connection. Okay, so when Ingram Gamble comes in and you get 36, over time you'll get that connection between 36 and the Connect Bridge. And eventually that will be your highway to highway connection through Anchorage. It's about $243 million. That's the that will be paid by toll revenue. It's kind of one of the horse before the cart. We don't need to build this until we have the traffic. If we have the traffic, we have the revenue to build it. Again, this falls under Kubota's authority and will fall under Kubota's finances. There's what the two ACs on your left, and Ingram Gamble is the future models on your right. Okay, how are we going to pay for it? Well, we did a model over the private partnership, and I'll get into that a little bit later, but it's a 35-year contractual obligation based on toll revenues. And people say, well, how much are you going to charge? And it's $5 for passenger vehicles each way, and then it's based on axle counts and stuff for commercial. And they say, well, who's going to pay $5 to go that way? Well, you priced gas lately. I mean, it takes $10 to drive to Wasilla every day, you know. So our model, we think, is realistic. We think it's ground proven. And so over the course of the 35 years, which is a public-private partnership, is about $4.1 billion of revenue, gross revenue that comes in. Okay, now how does a public-private partnership work? And a lot of folks, I mean, this is new to the state. Although ADA and stuff have done some projects, this is very new to the state. It is a public-private partnership. That means to me, and I explain it to the governor, is both sides have to win. The public has to have some risk and they have to have some reward. The private sector has to have some risk and they have to have some reward. So it's a sharing of both. And risk, to me, I'm a capitalist private sector guy. Reward is directly proportional to risk. And I'm sure the finance guys will tell you, you know, you want to hit for the fence, you know, you better get some return out of it if you make it over the fence. But anyway, so here's where the risks lay out. The state's biggest risk is toll revenue. Will the traffic come? Will we grow? Will you see development? Okay, without it, well, it's a liability to the state. If there's no traffic on it, it's a liability to the state. But you're really betting that we're not going to grow at all, and there's not going to be any development in the next 25 years. Private sector. Okay, I've heard this as well. What's in it for them? It's a guaranteed 12% return. Well, we don't guarantee any returns. We use 12% on the equity return, and it's only part of a model. We don't guarantee it. The contract for this, and we're currently finalizing it, has got to be 15 inches thick. You know, I haven't read it, never will read it. That's the Department of Law's responsibility to read it. But, and of course, the private partners, and there's a couple of private partners in the room today on the short list, they value the risks, and at the end of the day, we'll get something back, and here's a price, and we'll have to look at that. But what's their risk? Their risk is financing it. They bring the finance to the table. State of Alaska doesn't finance it. They bring basically close to $1 billion worth of finance to the table. $1 billion, which frees up $1 billion of other state money for other highway stuff. I mean, to me, it's a no-brainer. They finance it, they designed it, they build it, they operate it, they collect tolls. I mean, and believe me, if you talk to any of the shortlisted firms, and they'll probably tell you the state's overly covered on that. We have all kinds of penalties. If you don't clear snow quick enough, if you don't collect enough tolls, there's a penalty for everything. Well, you know, we're still working out the details on that. But so they take a risk, we take a risk. The capacity improvements, which the Ingram Gamble is part of our responsibility, so we take on that risk. Shortlisted firms, these are, you know, kind of who's a who. We were pretty pleased. I went back to Wall Street about this time last year, and we rolled out part of our presentation, and this was before we did the SOQ solicitation. Tremendous interest. I mean, it was actually pretty neat. We had over 200 and some investors at one of the presentations, and I had followed the group from Texas on P3s, and they were talking about infrastructure and stuff, and I had some numbers, and I talked about this project and hydroelectric and bullet lines and, you know, the P3 opportunities in Alaska. And I said, you know, here's what's really great. We're a young state. We're financially secure. And I challenged them to go to any other state and find $88 billion in the bank. And I said, we are a good place to invest, and we are a good risk to take on. So these are the three firms, or three, they all have catchy catch names, you know, and I couldn't even tell you who they are. But it's kind of made up of equity partners, design partners, contractors, maintenance, and financial advisors and stuff. And these are the who, actually back up, six firms submitted on this, six consortiums or groups. We were told by Wall Street they had never seen all six of the major players come to the same project. This is how mature we think this project is. Tremendous interest. Procurement process. Okay, so we're in the process of drafting this. This takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of lawyers' time. We've gone through our one-on-one industries where we sit down with each of the consortiums and do one-on-one reviews, and they tell us why it won't work, and then we kind of go back and figure out what we want to do. But so we're in the draft procurement stage. We'll go to a formal. We will not do the formal until we have the legislation in place. The legislation is critical. The stronger the legislation is, and you've probably heard about the obligations and the House bills and Senate bill, and you know how this is going to commit the state to, you know, $3 or $4 billion worth of liability. I'll get to that. It's not true. But the stronger the obligation language is, or the reserve fund language is, to developer, the less their money costs and the better price we get back from them on their payment structure. It's like getting a loan using collateral. A secured loan with collateral costs a whole lot less than an unsecured loan, and I'm going to do it by my good name or goodwill. Okay, so the idea is to get this language into our contract so that they know what they're pricing. So we go through it, then we award it. And it will be awarded mostly based on the annual availability payment, or what we will pay the developer, private partner, to design, build, operate, and finance. And also point out, they don't get their first check until the bridge opens. So when people say, well, the state takes on all the risks, You know, there hasn't been many projects the state has built where we hadn't had risks or construction delays or claims, and I just have to smile and say, that's not my problem, that's the private partner's problem. Okay, kind of the scope, I kind of went through it. Finance, design, build, operate, maintain, 35 years. These are the items that we had in the bills. As I said, we did pass the House 25-12. Very, very good support, not only of Anchorage and Mat-Su, but rural Alaska also. The 12 that voted against it, I could have told you they were going to vote against it before we ever went to Juneau. But we have a reserve fund. Part of that reserve fund is set up by legislation. It's funded through appropriation. And that is to tell our private partner the state is good for their word and that we have enough money in the initial years to cover the shortfall. We know in the first opening years of this that the private, that the tolls will fall short of our payment. And this reserve fund is for that, is dedicated to that. And then there's some private activity bonds, a lot of discussion about committing state bonding capacity. These are pass-through private activity bonds. We act as a conduit. We have no liability for them. They don't go on our books. Although if you read the press, they'll say they're on our books, and they're not. And there's a termination for convenience. Okay, I've used this analogy a lot of times in journals. It's like buying a house. You know, the biggest check you'll ever write is the day after you close, okay? And the cost for this, termination for convenience, that the state decided on day one after the bridge was open, it would be about $1 billion. We would have to write a check for about $1 billion, be done with the contract, over with it, all the revenue comes to us, okay? It's kind of like your house. When someone asks you how much do you owe on your house, you don't total up all the payments for the next 20 years, do you? Okay? But the critics of this project, when they say the state's obligation is $3.2 billion, is they've totaled up all the payments for the whole 35 years and have not even addressed the revenue coming in. Okay, so the largest single obligation of the state would be the termination for convenience on day one, which is about $1 billion. It is not the state's intent to do that. It is in there in case for some reason the state wanted to exit the private partnership. Hey, here's the forecast, 60-year, we do a 60-year model. $14 billion, and that's based on the projected population growth and also on the tolls. Now here's a curve that tells it all, okay? The green is what we call excess or net revenue. The red are different colors in the bottom there, are the private partners' availability payments. You can see in the initial years, you know, the payments are higher than the revenue coming in, and we know that. I mean, we're not trying to fool anybody. It's like opening a hotel. It's not full the day you open it. You know, it takes a while for it to build up to capacity. You can see where the intent of this is that the project pays for the availability payment. So we don't have to go back to the legislature and ask for additional reserve money. Okay, now the green stuff, the net, is what I call the future transportation of Alaska. The green can go anywhere in the state, from Barrow to Dutch to Ketchikan. It can be used for highways, bridges, ports, harbors, boardwalks in rural Alaska, anything that falls under Title 23. It can also be used for roads in Anchorage. Okay, there's a little thing, if you look in the Anchorage the Metropolitan Transportation Plan, about an Alaska Transportation Fund, and they have a line item on how much transportation fund they're going to be able to access over the years. Well, guess what? This is what feeds that transportation fund. Okay, so when they don't want this project, I have to say, well, how are you going to feed the transportation fund? Because this green would go into a statewide transportation fund at some point. So there's about $9 billion over a 60-year window that we're projecting will be utilized for statewide transportation outside of the Kinnick Arm crossing. Why reserve fund? I talked about it earlier. It's a secured line. It shows our private partner that we're serious about it. Takes care of the shortfall, reduces the payment. Okay, it gives us the best proposal back. Hey, I've heard all this thing about, oh, you'll come back to the tap, you're never going to be done, you're going to ask for money every year. Well, this is a motto of, the red is where we ask for money, this is this reserve fund. We set it up at $150 million. You see the red down there is where we're tapping into it. We never fall below our threshold. We never go back to the legislature and ask for money. And then the green is where we actually come, we're back on the positive side. So it gives you kind of a graphical view of what the reserve fund would look like. Right away, we're in right away right now. We do have some permits that we're working on, the core permit 401, letter of authorization from National Marine Fisheries. We do have a no jeopardy in the beluga. We do have a record of decision that we got in a little over a year ago. So right now we're working on the final permits. Timeline 2014 is what we're expecting. And I said, we do have to be back at the legislature next year working on these bills. We do have a game plan between now and then to do more formal public education and legislative information. Benefits to the bridge, you know, the list is almost endless. You know, it's funds a new transportation fund, provides a second route out of Anchorage, relieves congestion, provides for future transportation. Road north. I mean, there's a list of them. It was interesting, and I have to ask this question: Is anybody in the room tell me how much of the Kenai Borough is on the west side of Cook Inlet? Unless I've already told you. So, well, 47% of the Kenai Borough is on the west side of the inlet. Half of their boroughs on the west side. When I did a presentation down there a year or so ago, they said, "We support the project, but you missed the most important point." And I thought, "Well, I don't miss anything. So what did I miss?" And they said, "Well, all our land on the west side." This is what it looks like: 28 miles from the bridge, and we connect to a road system already there. Okay, so I told the governor this could be the first road to resources. You know, this is the first road to the west side of Cook Inlet. 28 miles, and you could leave Anchorage and be over to Beluga. So it's connecting to an infrastructure. It has the potential to connect to an infrastructure. It's already there. A lot of folks say, "Well, how are you going to build in mud?" Well, actually, what we're building is nature's concrete, consolidated glacial till. This is a scour trough that comes through Cook Inlet. You can see how it drains out. It's a bathtub, drains twice a day. So there really isn't a mud line in the middle. So we're in some very highly consolidated till. The bridge is, right now, it looks like it'd be a 9,200 feet in length. The total crossing is about 14,000 feet. This is what season one would look like, putting in the pile structures. And these are an oscillating pile to minimize the noise impact to the belugas. So the piles go in, they have teeth on the end, they're basically screwed in, and then you bale them, you cage them, and pour your concrete. And of course, the developer will have, the private partner has the ability to give us design alternatives as long as they meet our criteria for noise abatement and stuff. So they may look different than what we have modeled. Yeah, this is going from the Point McKenzie side to Anchorage. And if you haven't been out there lately, this is what it looks like. The only thing we're missing in this, we don't have the bicycle and we don't have the pedestrian part of it, but this is what it's a low profile bridge because you have flight restrictions from Elmendorf. We have to have 50 feet of clearance for a Coast Guard permit from high tide. Significant amount of fill, armor rock. Armor rock will be one of the challenges for the private partner. Where you're going to get it. There's a few places, there aren't a lot locally. Okay, that's the end of our presentation, so if you have any questions.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Chair of the Kinnickarm Bridge Toll Authority Board of Directors, Michael Foster. He was recorded speaking at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Make It Monday Forum on April 23rd. Following his update on the Kinnickarm Bridge project, Mr. Foster responded to questions from audience members.
And the first question is, how would an Alaska Railroad commuter line to Mat-Su affect the overall picture?
I would assume that's a question for light rail on the Glen Corridor. I know the railroad has looked at that. I don't believe they have progressed further than just looking at it. As far as a commuter, I think it would it would take care of some of the population growth, but you're still going to have significant population growth. You're still going to have significant land use for industrial business and residential, and So I think it would help with some of it, just as if there was a ferry in place, it'd help with some of it. But when you're looking at 100-some thousand people, that's you need road infrastructure.
Okay. Please talk to the positive benefit of emergency access, I guess.
Well, as we all know, I live in Eagle River, and I'm sure a lot of you commute on the Glen. Is about once a month the Glen is closed, and it's closed for anywhere from a few hours to, it can be longer than that, depending on an accident or some kind of event. And of course, on fair days, if you ever head out that way on fair days, you might as well turn around and go home and wait. So right now, there's only one access north, and if we ever had another 64 quake or something, and we lost one or two of the bridges on the existing Glen, this would provide another avenue out, another corridor out. So right now, if you had to evacuate Anchorage for some reason, a fire or something, or Kenai coming north, there's only one road out of Anchorage going north, and that's the Glen.
Is it Kubota's contention that several thousand acres of land available for residential development 10 to 20 minutes from downtown Anchorage will not affect Anchorage home values?
I would send that one over to Mayor Sullivan because I think he's got a better answer, but my statement would be no. And frankly, because Anchorage is running out of space, and so the value of land in Anchorage isn't going to significantly differ in the future. And if people do move out, that they're going to backfill that. And if it's anything, it'd be a small blip. But as the mayor will tell you, and some of our projections is, there's a significant amount of traffic that will go from Anchorage to the Mat-Su across the bridge for jobs and related businesses. And if you look at some of the models for Point McKenzie industrial area that ICER's done, there's significant jobs that will create in that port area that Anchorage commuters will go to. So it's not only just people are going to move for affordable housing and then commute to Anchorage. You're going to see Anchorage commuting over there for work and coming back to Anchorage. So the long answer to the question is, short answer to the question is, I don't believe it's going to impact the value of property in Anchorage.
Okay. Looking way off into the future, by 2035, do you see this particular Kubota Bridge providing traffic relief to the Glen Highway?
It should be providing traffic relief to the Glen probably in the next 10 years, because what's happening is once the bridge is built, the growth that would happen in, say, the Eagle River all the way to Wasilla will more than likely or possibly start to happen on the Point McKenzie side, so it will start to alleviate some of that traffic on the Glen. However, let me just make sure everybody understands this, is we're not saying by building the bridge you eliminate the improvements to the Glen. The improvements to the Glen, 6-lane, 8-lane, high occupancy lane, will certainly still happen, because there will still be growth in the Palmer, Eagle River, South Wasilla area that will still use the Glen as a corridor. It just defers it a little further out.
Okay. The image of the Kinnick Arm Crossing remind me of the Florida Keys Bridge systems built in the early 1900s. Are there any analogies to that structure and the Kinnick Arm Crossing?
Well, they cross a body of water is one analogy. Yeah, I don't know. In comparison, they're both low profile structures, but I can't say that they're. You know, Florida does have some private partnerships. They're one of the active states that are looking at. In fact, the last big one was Miami Tunnel, which is about an $800 or $900 million project, and it was done through a public-private partnership, very similar to what we're doing right now.
And I think there was another question that was relatively similar to that, but it asked, again, maybe for your vision, on what will the development look like in the Mat-Su Borough side with access to these, the thousands of acres of undeveloped land?
Well, I think it's pretty exciting, and, I have to reflect back a little bit. And I remember when there wasn't really a road up on Hillside, and there certainly wasn't any houses on Hillside, and Potter's Marsh was where we went to hunt. and Eagle River was a two-lane, or Glen was a two-lane out of town. So with growth, you see change. It was the highest building when I was a kid was the old medical hospital, which isn't there any longer. And so what you'll see across Point McKenzie is, I believe you'll see residential development, you'll see some business development, industrial, and I won't say you'll see a twin city, because I think Anchorage is always going to be the economic engine, the high rise of South Central, but you'll certainly see growth. I mean, there's a, if you look at this total South Central numbers, is you're looking at 150 to 160,000 people in the Mat-Su area, and you're looking at another 50, 60,000 people in the Anchorage area. You're looking at over 200,000 people in the next 25 years. They have to go somewhere, and so with that, you see growth. The footprint expands.
Very good. Well, Mike, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Chair of the Kinnickarm Bridge Toll Authority, or KABATA, Board of Directors, Michael Foster. Following his update on the Kinnickarm Bridge project, Mr. Foster responded to questions from audience members. He was recorded speaking at the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Make It Monday Forum on April 23, 2012. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans at alaskapublic.org. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.